the Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellett.
And welcome in. This is the Battleground State Report. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, Battleground State News on Facebook. You'll find links to some of the stories that we'll be talking about today. Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy here with you today to kind of bring you up to date on what's happening in some of these battleground states. The number of presidential candidates on the Democratic side of the aisle continues to grow. What are they up to, 22, 23? And yet I don't think anybody's particularly overly impressed with any of the pack at this point. There's a lot of fluidity in what's happening. And Joe Biden is going to be coming to Tennessee on May 20th. So lock up your daughters, your wives, any female you carry about, you care about. Make sure you keep them undercover and out of reach when creepy, sniffy, gropey Uncle Joe comes comes to Tennessee. Michael, the focus of Battleground State News is to keep an eye on what's happening in the battleground states. We keep getting, you know, these news reports of polls here and polls there. The Trump's in trouble. And yet when you look at the battleground states, you look at the issues that will move voters in those states, President Trump, with the economy and everything else, seemed to be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's interesting also to look at, there's a big political action committee called America First Action. It's now headed up by Linda McMahon. She's the wife of Vince McMahon, the founder of the, you know, WWE, and soon to be the XFL. Happening in January.
Do they start their fundraising meetings with her? Let's get ready to rumble! Or is that the other wrestling folks?
No, I think that's it. That's her. She'll walk, you know, obviously.
That's how they should start the Trump rallies.
Let's get ready to rumble! I like that. So she obviously has, she ran for the Senate in Connecticut, lost, not by too much, and then was named head of the Small Business Administration by President Trump. Now, there are a lot of jobs that would be interesting to have in the Trump administration. Heading the Small Business Administration would not be on my list of those jobs, right? So she was there in sort of a backwater position. And she left to head up the campaign of this super PAC. And her job there is, you know, go out and raise money. The other people involved, one of the is Brian Walsh, who was a political operative with the National Republican Congressional Campaign Committee for many years. And Sean Spicer is also listed there. I think he's just going to do a little bit, you know, PR associated with them. But they have looked at the Electoral College map, the battleground states, and they have identified the big six states where they're going to allegedly spend hundreds of millions of dollars between now and the general election. And those big six states, the six most important states that they've identified, Steve, are most of them, five of them are the states that we've identified as the part of the 17 battleground states whose outcome is in doubt in 2020. One of them is one we talked about, but we hadn't included. So I'll tell you the big six and be curious to see your reaction to them. They think if they win these big state six states for President Trump, he will be reelected. They are Ohio, Georgia, North Carolina, Florida, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. So on our radar, we have said that the three most critical states right now are actually Pennsylvania and Michigan on their list, and the third one, Wisconsin. That's on our list of three. They don't include Wisconsin in the big six, I think in part because it only has 10 Electoral College votes. All these other ones, I think, have like 16 or more Electoral College votes. But they've added Georgia. What do you think of that?
You know, I think Georgia is a reach for the Democrats, despite their claims that the governor's race was stolen from Stacey Abrams.
Stolen!
I think the issues that are going to affect voters in most of Georgia, the turnout that will come in Georgia, is running against the Democrats. And I like what I'm hearing from folks in the Trump campaign that are wanting to increasingly put states like Colorado, New Hampshire, and Nevada into the mix. Again, they feel like they can expand the battlefield and maybe put those states in play with an opportunity to make the Democrats have to play in both in the policy arena and in various geographic areas that they're, you know, they're wanting to take for granted. I think Colorado is a prime example. They're already seeing the negative impacts of a Democrat governor, Polis, who's very liberal, very extremist, the attacks that they have put in legislatively against the oil and gas industry in Colorado that diminishes the earnings, diminishes the wages, diminishes the actual tax collections of the state. I think people in some of these states are seeing what happens when you put Democrats in charge. They try to raise taxes. They put through the most aggressive pro-abortion, including late-term and after-birth abortion legislation. We've seen that in New York. We've seen it in Virginia. And in Pennsylvania this week, we saw pro-life activists being attacked by a legislator for simply wanting to protect the lives of unborn babies.
A Democrat, liberal, gay legislator.
So these are issues that do move the dial among some of those blue-collar, conservative Democrat, I'd say Reagan-Trump type voters, and we're increasingly seeing that in the black community, there are voices speaking up for the protection of unborn black babies because black children, black kids are aborted at a much higher rate than whites. In New York City, more black babies are aborted each year than are born live each year. And I think, again, if the abortion issue, this particularly late-term post-birth abortion agenda that the left-wing extremist Democrats are promoting, I don't think that's going to play as well as they think it does in the black community. And if Trump and the Republicans pick up just 5% more, 10% more of the African-American vote, move from an 8% to 15, 16, 18% on that issue, Democrats can't win. And that would include places like Pennsylvania.
Exactly. When we come back with the Battleground State Report, we'll have more on the Electoral College map for 2020. You're listening to the Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kelly.
You're listening to the Battleground State Report.
And welcome back in. This is the Battleground State Report. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com on the web. That's battlegroundstatenews.com, Battleground State News on Facebook. If you've not already liked us on Facebook, I encourage you to get that done, where you'll find links to stories that do have an impact on the national race, Senate races, congressional races, and of course the presidential race. As we look at President Trump feeling pretty confident just this weekend, or this past week, he was in Florida, back where one of his very first rallies was conducted, had 7,000 to 10,000 people in the panhandle. People getting there hours and hours before the rally, a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of energy. And he seems, by all appearances, to have the energy and the confidence of what's going on that you don't see among the Democrats. The Democrats are like screaming and ranting, and they look angry, and they fumble and bumble around. And President Trump looks like he's enjoying himself.
He's the youngster in the race, by the way. He's 72, I think, now. And he's running again. The Democratic frontrunners are 76-year-old creepy Joe Biden. And how old is Bernie? 76, 77?
He's in that same range.
He's way up there. And
he's very angry.
He's very angry. Well, but hold it. He's got a great new idea that he and that youngster, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, just talked about this week.
And the woman who was surprised and scared to learn what a garbage disposal
that
is?
That very same one.
Oh, okay.
That very same one. So they've together got a wonderful, wonderful idea that's really going to win the election for Bernie Sanders. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
So what they want to do, they want to set up a new nonprofit bank, right? Because all these for-profit banks apparently aren't working. But the brilliance of their idea is they want the Postal Service to run it.
But that's such a bastion of efficiency and economic viability that's exactly the folks that I'd want to run their, quote, new bank. Are they going to run it like a socialist bank where nobody makes deposits, everybody just does withdrawals, so it would fit very well with Bernie Sanders' economic plans and Ocasio-Cortez's plans? Yeah, that'll be a bank that'll work. Nobody ever makes deposits, they just make withdrawals.
There you go. That will work. You know, we were talking about the Electoral College map, and here's the math that Brian Walsh of America First Action put together. They believe that President Trump can easily secure 164 electoral votes in comfortably red states like Alabama and Louisiana. And they need only 109 votes, they think, to reach a winning 270. They say, well, actually, they don't even need that many. If they've got 164, they need actually 107 to reach 270, 106 to reach 270, the winning number, not 109. But I was reading from another publication that's not Battleground State.
Not as accurate.
Yeah, they didn't do the math on it. So anyways, these six states we talked about, Ohio, Georgia, North Carolina, Florida, Pennsylvania, Michigan, together they have 114 Electoral College votes. So you put those together, 278 Electoral College votes.
So the Democrats win. Figuring that North Carolina's in play now because they're going to have their convention there. Do you think people vote based upon where a party holds its convention?
Well, the Democrats are going to hold their convention in Wisconsin, and the Republicans are going to hold their convention in North Carolina, both picking battleground states. I don't think either one a convention is going to make any difference in the state. What do you think?
I don't think the fact that the Republicans held their convention in Cleveland, Ohio, moved Ohio. It was the votes. It was the polls.
Yeah.
It was the campaigning. It was the policies of the candidate. It was that people liked Donald Trump more than they liked Hillary Clinton. I don't think the location of these conventions matters.
I would agree with you completely in that regard. I was up there, by the way, in Cleveland in July of 2016 for that. Cleveland did a fantastic
job. They did a
job.
Great job.
You were there too, weren't you?
Yeah, I was a Cruz delegate. Although the convention site for the Tennessee delegation, I don't know, we were about 400 miles away. It seemed like, I mean, we were way on the outskirts. We weren't anywhere near Cleveland, but we were able to get in by buses each day and participate in the convention activities. Interestingly, we were sitting right next to Mrs. Cruz when Ted Cruz gave his speech, where he did not endorse President Trump, as many people had expected him to do, and the vitriol, the hatred, the screams that Mrs. Cruz was getting from those gathered at the convention was absolutely disgusting and despicable, and did not reflect well on any of the folks who were engaging in that kind of behavior.
So, you know, one of the toughest jobs in the world, I would think, would be to be the wife of Senator Ted Cruz.
I think being a political wife or a political spouse, even Pete Buttigieg's husband, being a political spouse is like the most painful job you can possibly have. A, because it doesn't pay anything. B, because you get all the flack and none of the benefit. And because part of the problem is you've got to watch your spouse, who you care about, get just absolutely obliterated all the time in the media, and you really can't do anything to help them. You can't do anything to defend them. You're not in the arena. You're sort of in a spectator position and just have to watch someone you really love and care about constantly get abused in the media.
Yeah. By the way, who would you say right now does the best job as in that worthless, thankless job? Not worthless, thankless job as a political spouse. Who on the national stage is doing the best job as a political spouse?
I would argue on one hand it's Elizabeth Warren's husband, because given the opportunity to, I'm going to get me a beer. Do you want one? He said no, thank you, and immediately went back off camera. Very wise guy. Not a wise guy, but a very smart guy. So I think I'd give him some props for that. I think Melania Trump is just the epitome of grace, class, beauty, brightness. I mean, I think she's awesome. And if she was any first lady other than married to President Trump, she'd be on the cover of every fashion magazine, on the cover of every woman's magazine every month. But because they're putting their political agenda ahead of a remarkable first lady's appearance and smarts and agenda, she basically gets blacklisted by the women's magazines and the fashion magazines when, again, she's the most beautiful and bright first lady I think we may have had in history.
Well, and I haven't seen any negative comments about her. She's very
They just ignored
measured. Yeah, but even former White House Chief of Staff John Kelly, right? I don't know if you saw this. He went out there and did an interview a couple days ago, and where he said, "Well, you know, we got a problem with some of the president's family because, you know, they have an agenda and they're pushing things and they're a force to be dealt with. But they asked him about Melania. He had nothing but good things to say about her.
He's clearly talking about Jared Kushner and you know, maybe some of the sons and Ivanka. Yeah. I think probably more Ivanka and Jared Kushner because they're there trying to push their more Democrat liberal agenda every day.
Kind of globalist, really.
Yeah. I think what Jared's supposedly coming up now with his new peace plan for the Middle East.
And, of course, he's so experienced in that sort of thing.
Yeah. I liked it when he went to the Middle East and was wearing the navy blue jacket over his – or had the, I guess, the bulletproof – vest over his navy blue jacket. It's like, dude, you know, dress like you're not going to a cocktail party in the Hamptons.
Yeah.
When you're going into a war zone.
Anyway, so, yeah, I getting back to the political
space. Having been into war zones myself, I didn't wear my navy blue blazer and my Hamptons-type attire when going into, you know, Iraq. And
so we're talking about the political spouses that are doing well in, or poorly for their candidate significant others. One spouse that's going to be a problem is Bernie Sanders' wife.
You mean the one that, you know, basically has profited big and kind of ran some skeezy, sketchy academic operations
to
profit?
She was the president of college in Vermont. And
was it one of those online colleges or was it a real college?
Yeah, it was a real college, but they borrowed $10 million bucks from a bank.
Was it at the post office?
But it was based upon purported commitments from donors to contribute, except they didn't make those commitments. There were false representations, allegedly.
The kind of stuff that would send you to jail normally.
Except got off the hook on that one.
Would James Comey opine that if he was the prosecutor that he would get a prosecution and an indictment and a successful conviction under those cases, like he's opining that President Trump, if he was the prosecutor, would be going to jail?
No comment on that yet from him.
I think people are going to be going to jail. Comey's at the top of the list, and I don't think he will like jail. If you want to chime in with us, feel free to go to the Facebook page, battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, Battleground State News on Facebook. You can put your comments, share your comments. If you've not already liked us, be sure to get that done. And be sure to stay tuned to what we post there each week throughout the week. We'll be right back with more of the Battleground State Report in a moment, so stick around.
Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellett.
Hey, welcome back in. This is the Battleground State Report, battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, Battleground State News on Facebook. Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy here with you for this edition of the Battleground State Report. You know, the news as we head into the weekend is and through the weekend is whether or not President Trump can negotiate a deal with the Chinese to do this U.S.-China trade deal. Very important, particularly in a lot of these battleground states and the continuing the economic surge that we've seen with the tax cuts, that we've seen with the regulatory cuts. The Chinese, I think, are vastly miscalculating the U.S. political and economic scene, thinking that, well, you know, the U.S. economy is growing because of the tax cuts, and those are going to diminish in impact, and the U.S. Growth that we're seeing in their GDP that was supposedly going to take a magic wand to get it done is not going to be sustainable, and therefore we have a great opportunity to basically stick it to the Americans with another trade deal that helps us and not them. They miscalculate President Trump. They
didn't
miscalculate
happen,
our
did it?
Economy. They miscalculate pretty much everything, much the same way that Kim Jong-un, the North Korean dictator, miscalculated when the attacks on President Trump were taking place, just as they were going to supposedly strike a new deal with North Korea. He decided that, I think President Trump's weak. And as a result, he miscalculated and thought, I can kind of backtrack from the deal and Trump can't do anything. Trump walked from the deal. And as we headed into the weekend, North Korea started shooting a few of their rockets to kind of, you know, bluster up and act like they're big and bad. And I think they launched a missile that went, 100 miles or so. And the U.S. almost simultaneously launched a ballistic missile test from a submarine that went 7,000 miles. I think, like President Trump said at one point during the Kim Jong-un communications and disputes, ours go further, ours are bigger.
And they are.
That's true. So I think these countries miscalculate, just as the Democrats do in this country, miscalculate President Trump. He will walk from a bad deal. And this China trade deal looked like the Chinese were tearing up portions that had already been agreed to. As we roll through the weekend, they're still negotiating. They're still talking. It would be a big bump for the U.S. economy to get the deal done. But I don't think it has hurt the U.S. economy to have these tariffs in place and to have a president fighting back against the U.S. being ripped off in every trade deal for the last 40 or 50 years.
How does the president's strength in dealing with China versus Joe Biden's, weakness or ignoring of the threat from China?
Well, he doesn't just ignore it. He says there is no threat of China economically or militarily or otherwise.
While he's compromised corruption by proxy due to the $1.3 billion that the Chinese government has invested through the Bank of China into his son's investment company.
Not to mention the Ukrainian corruption.
How does that play out, particularly in the battleground states? Let's say the state where Joe Biden, the battleground state where I think most pundits would say Joe Biden has the most opportunity to win back a state that President Trump won in 2016, and that would be his native state of Pennsylvania.
Well, I think all those Rust Belt manufacturing states are going to be affected by the international trade policies. I mean, first of all, the Democrats are going to have to defend in places like Ohio, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, not so much, certainly West Virginia, portions of Virginia, coal country, where they have adamantly opposed coal mining, coal use in energy. I mean, you've got people whose lives are dependent upon the coal industry. They have been sacrificed on the altar of global warming by the Democrats. And I think a Joe Biden who, when he has to actually carry forward some of the policies that the Obama-Biden administration promoted and promised that they were going to do away with the coal industry. So I think just the coal industry alone, not to mention the steel and aluminum manufacturing and car manufacturing, all those industries that are dependent upon U.S. products, U.S. sales. I mean, when U.S. cars can't be sold in China because of tariffs and they're flooding our market with their products, I think Americans will understand that we've got a president who's fighting for us, not fighting for the globalization, not fighting for other countries to be able to continue to rip us off. And I think just as we will build the wall resonated with voters and will continue to do so as we're seeing that the president was right, that illegal immigration is costing us jobs, costing us our culture, costing us our national security. I think his focus, I'm worried about job security. I'm worried about American jobs, not Chinese jobs or Mexican jobs or European jobs. That's going to resonate with those workers in those battleground states. I don't think the president's communicating the message very effectively yet. I don't think they're as honed in like they did with Build the Wall. But I do think Americans get they've got a president who is finally standing up to our competitors in other countries, while you've got Joe Biden saying, oh, there are no competition at all. I think most people that have, the sense God gave a grapefruit know that the Chinese are an extraordinary competitive economically and militarily. They're expanding their reach into South America, into Europe, into Africa. Anybody who doesn't think China is a threat economically and to some extent militarily, certainly Japan, Taiwan, and those in the Asia-Pacific region see China as a military threat. It wasn't that long ago that they saw World War II and the China impact in that. China's a threat economically at the top of the heap. And for somebody like Joe Biden to deny it reflects that he is, again, completely in the tank. Maybe he ought to be wearing, like a NASCAR type vehicle that has all the sponsors and
put China
and
who on actually as a sponsor?
Yeah, China and Ukraine Joe? Definitely yeah. ought to be on his body that people can see because he's a wholly owned subsidiary of those two countries.
At least through his son, as Peter Schweitzer, the Breitbart editor and head of the Government Accountability Institute wrote, corruption by proxy. The proxy is his son, Hunter Biden, who apparently, other than push his influence from his father, doesn't have much to offer.
Well, and his moral integrity as a son, you know, maybe reflects on the dad. You can't always be responsible for the choices your kids make. But this is a guy who was kicked out of the Navy, what, like 30 days in for cocaine use? This is a guy who thought it was appropriate to, after his brother died, to start dating. I use that very euphemistically. Yeah. I don't think he was just sleeping with his brother's widow. I think they were awake most of the time. The bottom line is that this guy has no moral fiber, and I'm not sure that you can really distinguish that from his dad.
Well, that the Hunter Biden problem is going to continue to haunt Joe Biden throughout the campaign. I don't know if it's going to be enough to keep him from winning the Democratic nomination. Now, we've talked in another program earlier to Todd Starnes at Fox News, and he thinks the China-Ukraine connection is going to prohibit Biden from winning the Democratic nomination. I'm not so sure I agree with that, but, you know, he's going to have to deal with it.
Well, and Todd's a great friend of the show, great friend of ours for a long time. He's actually going to be in Tennessee this coming week
this Tuesday,
at the Wilson County Republican Party Reagan-Trump dinner. He's going to be there Tuesday. I'm going to be the MC. He's going to be there as the
speaker.
I'll
be in the audience cheering everybody on.
Taking pictures,
writing
a story.
Taking pictures, yeah, exactly.
But he also said he thinks Trump wins handily, and Todd travels the country. He's in that red state flyover territory on a regular basis. By the way, go to toddstarnes.com. Great site. You can always keep up with what he's talking about and focused on. I think he has a good finger on the pulse of where these people outside of Washington, outside of New York City, outside of San Francisco and California, that's where these races, that's the whole focus of Battleground State Report, battlegroundstatenews.com, is what are people thinking? What are the issues that are going to affect the votes in those places, not in New York City, not in Washington, D.C., where all the pundits gather and just repeat what they hear from each other? And I think Todd has a pretty good grasp on that. I think Biden ends up not being the nominee.
Because
he has a bump because he's just announced they're desperate to beat Trump. I don't know that they can stop Bernie Sanders, crazy Bernie! From eventually coalescing. Because as these other 20-some candidates drop off, most of their supporters are embracing the policies of Bernie. They're embracing a different personality.
Right.
But the policies
are Bernie's.
They embrace are much more left-wing, socialist, anti-American. And I think as those candidates drop off, their voters will tend to glom to Bernie rather than to Biden. Although, again, there is a strong, we got to beat him, and he's the guy that can best beat him. But as Bernie beats up Biden and brings the bump he gets from his initial announcement off, when Biden starts to fall, that's gonna create some momentum of falling in the polls that can take on a life of its own.
I think you're right. We'll see, though. We'll see how that all plays out. How much will Bernie take out of Biden's current lead? We got a year and some months to see how that all plays out.
Well, and all these 20-some candidates, they got to start cutting each other up. They can't just kind of stay in the pack. Right now, Buttigieg's been getting some attention. Biden's getting some attention. You know, the rest of these folks got to find a way to cut into Biden and Bernie and Buttigieg and the front runners, which means the long knives are going to come out and it's going to get bloody. We'll talk more about it in a moment. This is the Battleground State Report. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com on the web to find some of the stories we're talking about, and we'll be right back for a final segment.
This is the Battleground State Report.
And welcome back in. This is the Battleground State Report. One of the examples of how different candidates you've never even heard of, or, you know, either fumbling or stumbling their way into the primary process, or getting support from people you're questioning, why are they doing that? Marie Harf, who worked in the Obama administration, has been doing a radio show, Benson and Harf, with Fox News Radio, has been on the Fox Nation with one of the Fox News personalities. She's just left to go to work as the communications director for a congressman I've never heard of out of Massachusetts who's running for president.
And Seth Moulton?
Seth Moulton. It's like, what's behind that? So these guys are getting supporters that you're making, you know, you're kind of raising your eyebrows going, she really sees that guy having a path to victory? What's the real story there? Were their numbers bad? Was she going to get the boot from Fox? I don't know what happened there, but this Seth Moulton character, I would say, and maybe, you know, keep the tape, Jimmy, but maybe I'll be wrong and we'll be going, gosh, how did he not see that? I don't see this guy having any path to the White House.
Keep the tape, Jimmy. He has no path. I'm just telling you, no path.
Why would she leave a Fox gig to go work for a congressman who's going nowhere?
The Fox gig is pretty sweet especially if you're a Democrat. And there are, you know, Fox
is she going to run for governor in 2 years or
Fox
something?
Fox is moving. Clearly, Fox is moving towards the center, maybe even towards the left. She would have had a great future there. And, you know, she's kind of the typical insipid Democrat talking point person. But she's, you know, she articulates the view well enough, and she's got the appearance that fits the Fox model.
Blonde.
Yes. Yes, indeed. It is improbable that she thinks she's going to be better off. But as the community, I'll tell you, just for the heck of it, we ought to just call her up and
what are you thinking?
Interview. What are you thinking?
Does Seth Moulton have a path to be governor of Massachusetts? I don't know.
But who cares?
Senator?
Who cares? Seth Moulton and the path to the United States Senate in Massachusetts is blocked. You got Elizabeth Warren, who, you know, as loony as she is and as I'm going to have me a beer Pocahontas.
You're not going to beat her in a primary.
You're not going to beat her in a primary. And you're not going to beat Ed, I'm in favor of the Green New Deal, Markey. Let me sit next to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez at her press conference and be a prop.
I mean, how old's Markey? Like 180 years old or something?
Yeah, he's probably about 70. Markey, if you want to look at, you know, if you go to the dictionary and you're looking for the term political hack, his picture is there. I mean, he's not the brightest bulb at all. He does have sort of the blow-dried hair look thing going on, but I don't think he's ever said anything intelligible. And certainly, you know, he's being led by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
He's been in Congress or the Senate since the Massachusetts House of Representatives. He's been in politics since 1973.
Yeah.
You know, if you haven't fixed things since then, you know, at what point is it going to kick in that your leadership is finally going to make a big difference?
He's not about fixing anything. He's about getting reelected. And really, you know,
he's 72, by the way.
He's 72, so he's going to run again for another term. So I
maybe
don't know.
She has some inside knowledge that maybe he has some health issues and he's not going to run for reelection.
But
and she
again,
thinks Moulton running for president raises his profile in Massachusetts and makes him the heir apparent or something.
Yeah, but
I mean, I'm just trying to find that she's not an irrational, stupid person. So why would she leave a good gig with Fox that pays a lot more than a communications director gig would pay on a presidential campaign unlikely to raise a lot of money?
I'll give you a theory. You want to hear it? Here it is. There are, 22, 23 Democratic presidential candidates right now?
Okay. Yeah, it's like 22, 23. Because, well, yeah, just had Bennett, senator from Colorado, jump in.
The world is waiting for Senator Michael
Bennett.
That's
sent shockwaves through everybody. Yeah, oh, my gosh, yeah. Now he's in.
His numbers bumped from 0.0% to 0.00001%.
And all these folks are trying to raise just enough money to get into the debates, to be on the stage, to get just enough poll numbers to get in the debates on the stage. And do they stay on the stage once they get there, if they can get there? And I don't know that Seth Moulton does that.
He's
so what's your theory of why she would do this?
Because she's positioning. Here's a theory. It's just a theory. But it doesn't make any sense that she would go to. If you rank these 22 candidates, where is Seth Moulton? 21? 20?
He's not a first-round draft choice.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
not a lottery pick.
Yeah. I think maybe only above Marianne Wilson, the spiritualist, whatever she is. Remember her? She's on the list, too.
I forgot she's even running.
Yeah, yeah.
Smallwell, whatever his name is, he's running. I mean, you got all these members of Congress that have thrown their name
in. Here's the theory.
No good reason.
She's decided she's tired of Fox News. She wants to get back in the political fray. There were no immediate offers. But Seth Moulton, who she maybe knows, offered her to be the director of communications. How long will he be in the race?
So he gets out early and somebody else picks her up.
Ding, ding, ding.
She's looking for the rebound guy.
She's looking for the she's looking for either it'll be Joe Biden, it'll be Bernie Sanders, or candidate X. One of those three, right?
I'm just looking up Seth Moulton. He's a former Marine officer.
Okay.
Probably wouldn't salute the commanding general, kind of like the Marine story that we saw this week. The Marine Corps' discipline has gotten so bad they don't even salute generals, and they show up for breakfast at the chow hall in
their
pajamas. Anyway, he's been a Massachusetts representative since 2015, so doesn't have a long career of having done much. His middle name, Wilbur? Yes,
Wilbur?
Wilbur Moulton. Again, he's a decent looking guy. He's 40. He does have a spouse, got married last year, Harvard BA, Harvard MBA. Maybe he's, looking at an opportunity to move. Again, if the Democrats somehow win, he'd be a candidate for a cabinet spot or a senior leadership spot at the Department of Defense or something. I mean, some of these guys are positioning themselves either 4 years down the line. So assuming Trump wins and if you're not in it this time, haven't kind of, set up the fundraising and increased your visibility, I think some of these people are looking at running really 4 years from now when Trump is term limited and the Democrats, have a better shot in an open seat and the Republicans are filling the giant vacuum of Trump's personality. So he may be in that class of I'm looking down the road, and maybe she's looking down the road of 4 years from now. He'd be a strong, solid candidate for the Democrats then, and she's, getting her, planting the seeds now that she thinks will grow into a good presidential candidate 4 or 5 years down the road. I mean, in the next round, he's a guy that if he acquits himself well, he'll probably be out of the presidential race before he has to give up his congressional seat. I mean, he can still run for president but not give up his congressional seat, he'll be out
before the race, so he keeps his congressional seat.
So he's got nothing to lose, and he travels the country and gets some attention with other people's money, raising his national profile. I mean, I could see that the benefits of that if it wasn't she's going to take a several hundred thousand dollar pay cut to do it. Maybe she's financially wealthy because, she did work for the Obama administration in a bureaucratic government job, and that's how people get rich if you're a Democrat. You make millions by working in jobs that pay $150,000 a year.
Yeah. Well, she's probably doing pretty well at Fox News, and I don't know.
Maybe she did some Ukrainian deals or Chinese deals with Hunter Biden. You never know.
Yeah. It doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense. I don't see Seth Moulton. What's the over-under when Seth Moulton drops out of the presidential race?
Right at or before New Hampshire. Because he's from Massachusetts, maybe he gets a little bit of a bump out of the New Hampshire primary. But again, is Elizabeth Warren still in? Does she, having been in that media market, and you're dividing up 20 candidates. I think he's out before you get to that point, simply because
no money.
He's not going to have the hard dollars to mount a real campaign.
Yeah. And the very minimal hard dollars he has, he's got to spend a lot of it on Marie Harf.
and maybe he's got some big independent spenders that'll do independent expenditures for him that are not going to be restricted by the amount you can donate to a candidate. But at the same time, you've got to raise the hard money. And you had Scott Walker, the Republican governor of Wisconsin, get out early in the Republican primary process, not because he didn't have the credentials, didn't have the credibility, didn't have the independent expenditure money to continue. Hard money, which is limited by that $2,700 a person or whatever it is now, it really limits how much you can raise when you're having to run a national campaign.
And Scott Walker was wise to get out of that presidential race as quickly as he did when he saw the writing on the wall. Now, in Wisconsin, he's involved in this Republican National Trust that's working on gerrymandering and raising money for that, and I think doing a good job. Very interesting about Scott Walker. You know, he's run for – he's been in one, two – first election, recall election, re-election, and then third re-election. Four races in 8 years for governor of Wisconsin. And the margin on all of those was like 1 point. He won the first three. Well, he actually won the by 5 points in his recall.
And as people in Wisconsin are facing huge tax increases and the result of a Democrat in the governor's office.
Just one.
They're probably thinking, okay, maybe we made a mistake.
Well, and he only lost by like 0.5% of the point, 0.5%. So, you know, Scott Walker in Wisconsin is positioned to, I think, make a difference in terms of the 2020 election there by pushing the Trump agenda there. He's also, I think, he's the kind of guy, you know, Scott Walker, he's the kind of guy probably his ceiling is, and where he ought to be, is governor. He's kind of a boring guy, and I don't see him on the national stage.
Yeah, but coming back is going to be difficult, and again, maybe that's where Seth Moulton and some of these other candidates who are running see themselves as setting the stage for 4 years from now. I've long believed that when Bill Clinton ran and President Bush's numbers were off the charts, that he was running to set himself up for 4 years later, which would be an open seat.
He absolutely was.
The Bush campaign ran a horrible race.
Horrible.
And he caught fire and he won.
And Ross Perot jumped in.
And Ross Perot helped change the dynamic.
If you look back on that, Ross Perot from a poor family in Hooks, Texas, went to the Naval Academy, didn't have a dime, made his fortune by being a sales guy at IBM and starting, you know, EDS, the Electronic Data Systems Company. There was one guy he really hated.
He hated Bush.
He hated.
He wasn't running to be president. He was running to make sure Bush didn't get reelected to the presidency.
He despised George H.W. Bush, and he accomplished his objective. He didn't want to be president.
So Clinton ran when nobody else was running because at the time he got in, President Bush's numbers were off the charts, and you didn't have that third-party candidate in yet. He ends up winning. I don't think that any of these candidates that are running among the 22 are thinking that lightning's going to strike and they will win. I think they think Trump may win re-election, and then they can be the next guy up. And I think that may apply to a whole host of these 22.
And the other thing is, you never know what's going to happen. And they're in the game, and let's see what happens.
Well, you got old guys, Biden and Bernie. I mean, you know, you're one stroke away from moving up the list from the 0.4% margin to maybe into double digits.
That's a good phrase.
You never know.
One stroke away.
Lightning can strike. 615 is I'm sorry, we're out of time today. BattlegroundStateNews.com, BattlegroundStateNews.com, Battleground State News on Facebook. You have a great rest of the weekend. We will be back next week. In the meantime, go to Battleground State News. And, oh, by the way, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers this weekend. We'll be back again next week.